Let us discuss the history of today. Today is the 20th day of Sivan. Today, it used to be for since the year 1171. In 1171, it was traditionally observed as a fast day. And in the old Sidurim, there are slichais for Tzomadalia, for Asar B'Teves, Shavas B'Tamus, and then there is a very large section of slichais, not now in Sidurim, for Chav Sivan. Today, the slichais for Chav Sivan do not exist in our Sidurim. I looked, the Art Scroll Siddur does not have it. I thought for sure I would find it in the Vilna Siddur. You know what the Vilna Siddur is? The Vilna Siddur is a very good Siddur. It's published by the Neturei Karta, unfortunately. Yeah. But my mother told me, when I told my mother, she told me I should take it out of the house. I know Chaim Berlin, they had it. It was a very popular Siddur until someone told the Rashi who published it. And it was very, as I was told, he was very disturbed. So he says, don't take them out, but don't buy any more. Don't buy any more. Don't buy new ones. Don't buy new ones. What? So I looked in the Siddur Vilna. The Siddur Vilna is just incredible. They have also a Machs. They have a Machs of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. At least Rosh Hashanah. I'm not sure about Yom Kippur. They have a Machs, a very interesting Machs for Rosh Hashanah. It's an amazing Siddur. It's just really, really, really an amazing Siddur. And everything about it. But in any event, they don't even have it there. I was shocked. I thought for sure I would find the Slichos for Chav Sivan. And it's not even in the Siddur Vilna. I looked yesterday in Oitzra Chachma. I found an old Seder Hayoim for old in the print from like a few hundred years ago. So there I found the Slichos for Chav Sivan. We don't do it anymore. For some reason, it's not done. It seems that until the Holocaust, it was still very popular in Poland. They recited the slichos for Chav. So that's what we're going to talk exactly. What is this all about? So primarily, there are two events. There are two major tragedies which we commemorate on Chav Sivan. The first tragedy took place, was instituted by Rabbeinu Tam, none other than the Hilka Rabbeinu Tam, the one who, you know, the grandson of Rashi. People who wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. He was the one that was misakein that Jews living in France, in the Rhineland, which I assume means Germany, right? The whole Germany. And England, three communities in the year 1171 should recite on Chav Sivan Slichos, because this was to commemorate a horrible blood libel that caused the death of 32 individuals. What was the story? The story was, this event took place between the Second and Third Crusade. We know the First Crusade took place in the year 1096. That's called Tatnu. The Jewish year Tatnu. Tatnu is, Tof is 800, Nu is 56, 856. Leprat of the fourth of the year 4000 of the Prat, the 4856. That's equivalent to the year, the secular year 1096. So we all know all about that from Tisha B'Av, when we read on Tisha B'Av no less than four kinos that focus on the First Crusade. Fast forward 100 plus years later to the year 1171. By the way, how many crusades were there by the Christians? There were a total of 10 crusades. After three, they weren't as significant. Okay, the first three were major crusades, and after the third crusade, the remaining seven crusades were minor relative to the first three crusades. But in between crusade number three, there was a blood libel in France. Blois. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Blois. The name of the city. Blois? Blois. 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 Blois, France. There's a city. There was a Jew who was riding on a horse who just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he witnessed a guy. One guy killed a child. He killed this. So this guy, he thought no one was watching, right? They don't have video cameras in those days. No one was watching. He thought he got away with killing with killing this child. And then he turns around, and lo and behold, who's watching from the other side? A Jew. A Jew's watching. Oh no, eyewitness. So he goes and he takes the baby. It seems like he took the child. He threw the baby into the river. I'm not totally clear exactly what happened, but he went and he ran away. He ran to the government, whoever the officials were, and he told them, the Jew killed the child, not me. The Jew, and of course, the Jew killed the child. Why? Because they want his blood for matzah. I'm not exactly sure all the details, but this event triggered a horrible blood libel against the Jews. The Goyim used this opportunity to round up 30 different versions, 31, 32, 40 people. 40 people were rounded up by the authorities. They were put on trial. It included 17 women, and these were tzaddikim, and even some of these were possibly from the Balei Tosfos. These were Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam. These were Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam, very, very holy people, and they made out of this a very horrible bilbul. And at the end, they decided that they are chayev misa. They're going to be sentenced to death, but they have one way out. And the way out, of course, is if they will convert to Christianity. If they'll accept Yashka as their God, v'chulu v'chulu, then they will redeem their souls and they will not be put to death. These 32 people refused to convert to Christianity, and they were burnt at the stake. Tradition is, a miracle is a miracle. Their bodies were not burnt. They didn't die, their bodies were not burnt, and then they murdered them by hand. They actually went and they I don't know what they did, they murdered them and they tried to burn their bodies. There were miracles that happened, the details I don't know, but there were miracles that the bodies were not burnt. They died, they were killed. It was considered to be a horror. Now it's hard for us to understand this because, I mean, of course we understand this, but like, you know, when we're dealing with the Holocaust, 6 million people. So when you say 32 people, and every person is the whole world, don't discount the value of one person, chas v'shalom. But, and also, this is following the Crusades. At the time of the Crusades, how many people were killed in the Crusades? 10,000 people in the first Crusade. In the first and second Crusade, how many people were killed? Between 10 and 30,000 Jews. And they were fast days. I mean, what was established to commemorate the Crusades? They fasted on Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Rosh Chodesh Sivan was also considered to be a fast day. And also in Sivan itself, the third day of Sivan, we read about all the details in the Kinois on Tisha B'Av. But this was a different event which took place about 100 years later. And there was another terrible pogrom, this blood libel, and therefore Rabbeinu Tam himself instituted that on the anniversary of this day, when these 32 tzaddikim were burnt at the stake, we should fast and we should recite slichos, and that is today. Today is the day when these people, now you have to understand something, it's very interesting, the portion they put it in the Sefer, I have a lot from Maritim with Simcha, and other Sfarim I saw, they put a very nice twist on this. Today we don't observe this. We should remember these people died al kiddush Hashem. It was a tragedy, but it was also a very great act of sanctifying Hashem's name. So you have to dwell at least on the good. Okay, if we're not going to fast, but at least remember that these people did. They refused to convert to Christianity, and they made an enormous kiddush Hashem. It's a very great zuchus for us. So Rabbeinu Tam instituted that. Three communities must fast: England, France, and Germany. All adults have to fast on this day and have to say slichos, vaychal, v'chulu, v'chulu. And there were slichos that were composed, and it can be found in these ancient machzorim, which have the slichos that were made. Now, in addition to a slicha, there was one new slicha that was written to commemorate. But they incorporated into the Nusach HaTzvila slichos that were written by Paitonim from years before. Specifically from the slichos from the time of the Crusades, the same one who wrote the Akdamos, Rabbi Meir Bar Yitzchak, the Shliach Tzibur. So one of his piyutim were also recited as part of the slichos for Chaf Sivan. There was another person, Shlomo Habavli, I don't remember all the details. There were three major. There was a Shlomo Habavli, Rabbeinu Gershon, who also wrote Sli. They already died. This was a previous generation. But the things that they wrote, the piyutim that they wrote, Rabbeinu Shlomo HaBavli, Rabbeinu Begershom, Rabbi Meir Bar Yitzchak, who wrote Akdamis, Shlich Tzibor, so what they composed was now recited on this day, Chof Sivan. Now, that's one major event that took place in Blois, France, in the year 1171. And also, one thing I mentioned is that also when they died, we always they died saying Shema. They were not saying Shema when they died, they were singing Aleinu. They were in the middle of reciting Aleinu l'shabeach l'adoin hakol. So therefore, today, when you daven mincha, and you come to Aleinu, say it a little slower. And when you say Aleinu the least, we're not going to say Slichus, we're not going to fast, we're not going to do anything today. But at least when you come today to Aleinu, at least they should have done by Shacharis. Okay, if I was a rabbi of a shul, I would have given a clap by Shacharis right before Aleinu, and would say, today is Chof Sivan, we're not fasting, we're not doing anything, but at least you should remember that on this day, in the year 1171, 32 people died al Kiddush Hashem, 17 of them were women, and the other ones were from the Baalei Tosis, they died al Kiddush Hashem, and they died while they were singing Aleinu L'Shabeach. And therefore, the very least we should do is to say those words with kavana and try to connect ourselves to these neshamas, and may their zechus, may their kiddush Hashem be a zechus to protect us, to guide us. Hashem shav rachmanis upon us. Yeah.
I just want to ask, how does Gadol where does it come that he has the authority
to impose the tainus? So the answer is he does. Yes, the Rabbanon, they have this power to do so. V'chol beis Yisrael yifku es hasreifa asher sodaf Hashem. By Nadav Aviv, when they died, it says in the Pasuk, this is the Makar, the Rambam discusses this. V'chol beis Yisrael yifku es hasreifa asher sodaf Hashem. When a tragedy happens, the whole Klal Yisrael has a duty, has an obligation to commemorate the terrible tragedy. The part of last week's parasha, says, "V'chisvo milchama bi'artzechem." If a milchama will come into your land, "V'harayosem b'chatzoytzrois," you shall blow the trumpets. Okay, al kolatzar alatzar hatzoyereschem. The pasuk says that when you have a tzara, you have to blow the trumpets. You have to express your pain. You have to commemorate. So the Rambam says this is an obligation that the rabban have a power to do so. Now you ask a question, so why don't we do it today? We'll come down a little bit later on. Very, very few. Like I told you, it's so few and far in between. You can't even find a sitter. I challenge you to find a sitter in any shul.
You've seen it,
but I challenge you to find a sitter anywhere in any shul today that has in the back of the sitter the Slichus for Chav Sivan. You're not going to find it. You have to go to the Oitzer Yisrael, that big, thick sitter which they find, it's full of dust all the way up on the fifth shelf. You can even get to, but in a regular article, so you're not going to find it. You're not going to find it. I told you the Vilna, so you're not going to find it. It's become a mamish, an afterthought. And even though this was a takono of Rabbeinu Tam, people are running to buy Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, but no one is running to be mekayim the takono of Rabbeinu Tam. He was only goyzer on the people in these three communities: France, Germany, and England. Go see today if anyone is in London. London, there was a terrible sreifa last night. Terrible thing. It's a horror. Horror what happened last night in London. It's not a coincidence. You have to the date. Chaf Sivan, a horrible thing there. How many people died? They say a lot of people are missing.
Six people that they know about so far.
But many people are missing. A terrible horror. And it's not a
In 1946, a
book. Yeah. They read. Okay, no, we're not finished. Okay. Okay, now, this is the first event. Okay, this was in France, 1171. Now, let's fast forward. 500 years later, we come to the period of time called of the 17th century in Poland, what was called by us Tach V'Tat, Tof Ches, and Tof Tes, which means 409, which corresponds to the Prat of the 5,000, which corresponds to the year 1648, 1649. These 2 years in English, in secular, correspond to the Hebrew dates of Hey Alofim, Tof Ches, Hey Alofim, Tof Tes. 1648, 1649. This is what's known on all the encyclopedias in history as the Khmelnytsky or Khmelnytsky, different ways to pronounce his name. Khmelnytsky and Nitsky massacres. And what it's all about. Now, first, a disclaimer, I know nothing about Jewish history. So whatever I'm going to tell you now, I'm going to mispronounce everyone's name. I'm just going to tell you the basic ideas which I've gleaned by reading a few articles online. I read the chapter of Berlwein's book in history, and another book I have at home. Okay, but I'm not making believe. I know nothing. I'm embarrassed. Chaval. I know nothing. Just let's go basic. You saw those and some ideas, some things to commemorate. So what happened? We have to remember that the Jews were expelled from England, from Spain, from Germany, from France. The reason why Jews found themselves in Poland, how did they get there? That's the big mystery. How did Jews get to America? How did Jews get to Poland? You know how they got to Poland? Because no one else wanted them. They were pushed out of Rome. They were pushed out, go back to Spain. They were pushed out of every country. So the only place that took them was Poland. In the beginning of the 17th century, or the mid-17th century, the Jews already had been living in Poland for about 250 years.
Many of them were brought to Poland and to Russia.
But only in small amounts.
Around the year 1000, they called them
down. But those were very small amounts. The vast majority who settled and made up what Poland was at the time of the 17th century, there were about a million, I don't remember the numbers, but a million Jews living in the whole region of Poland, Ukraine, that part of Russia, and right that connected to the Ukraine and Poland. There was about a million, approximately. Maybe I'm mistaken, maybe it's more, I don't remember exact numbers. But basically, how did they get there? The vast majority of that collection of Jews came after they were expelled from all of the other countries. They settled there. There were Jews who settled there right away. The Chorban Bayis Rishon, Chabayisheni already settled in Poland, but they were very, very small numbers. But now, and they were living there for about 250 years, believe it or not, relative peace and safety, security. There were pogroms, of course, all along, but pretty much they became very successful. Now, here was the problem. The problem was, they were under the controls of the Polish government, the Polish kingdom. Not a government. There was a kingdom. There were kings. Some of the kings were good to Jews. Some were not good to Jews. But there was a feudal system in place, and that is a disaster because the feudal system is you basically are abusing human beings. A few people on the top are very wealthy, and everyone else is a serf, a slave, is the bottom of the totem pole, and you suffer. The vast majority of the Ukrainians, they worked the land, they were farmers, they were serfs, they were slaves, they had nothing. They were slaves, they did not own land, they owned nothing, and they had to give all their assets, their wealth, produce to the rich Poles, the Polish people, these rich, rich people. And they resented it to no end. And therefore it was ma'as sakonif for the landlord, like people who have these slum apartments, for them to go collect rent. You know, you go to these dangerous neighborhoods to go collect rent, sakonis nefashis. They have to go with armed guards to go collect rent in some of these slum neighborhoods, even here in the Bronx, sakana. So it was the same thing there. The Poles, they could not go to collect rent. So who do they hire to collect the taxes? The rents, the Jews. The Jews are going to do all the dirty work. They're going to be the tax collectors. They're going to be the administrators. They're going to be in charge of everything. So the Jews were not allowed to own land, and the whole of whatever the situation was. So the Jews were put in a very, very bad position to be in between these serfs, these peasants, these slaves, and the rich Poles. And therefore the Jews, as the story of all of Jewish history, this is consistent from beginning to end. When a Jew is in Galus, Ruba the Chorma is because the Jew is caught in the crossfire. This is the Mitzvahs, this is the Crusades. The Crusades, there was a war against Muslims versus Christians. Jihad versus Crusade. And why do the Jews get slaughtered? Because they're stuck in the middle. They get caught in the crossfire. That's exactly what happened over here as well. The Jews were the go-between, the poor Ukrainians and the very rich aristocrats, the Poles. They were the land, they were the administrators, the tax collectors, the ones who lent money, and the bankers. And therefore, when the Ukrainians had enough is enough, the world was becoming modern. There's a renaissance taking place. The world was stirring that, you know, everyone is an equal. There was a feeling of equality in the world. you can't abuse human beings anymore. So they rose up. Now this, the beginning of the rebellion really rose up in the year 1635. I'm not sure it was at that point Khmelnytsky, he was involved in the beginning as well, but there was a rebellion. There was a rebellion, and in this rebellion in the year 1635, 2,000 Jews were killed. Because as they let out their anger on the Poles, they let out their anger on the middlemen, on the Jews, who also, I guess, they felt abused them. 2,000. But that event, it's a lot of Jews, 2,000 Jews in the year 1635 were killed in the rebellion, the beginning of the uprising of the Ukrainians to break away from the landowners, the Poles. That rebellion came to an end. There was some type of settlement. And the Jews made a very big mistake at that point in time, and they thought it was a one-time event. In hindsight is 20/20. They should have realized it's time to get out of here, or it's time to do something to somehow to protect yourself for what's coming next. For they thought this was new. It was an isolated event, and there were no precautions taken for the next 10 years. At this point in time, Khmelnytsky, he was the equivalent to Hitler, they say. They say he was a bloodthirsty mishugana, an egomaniac that equaled none other than Hitler. Haman, they compare him to Haman, they compare him to Hitler. He was in his 50s, he was in his mid-50s. He had nothing. He was a very frustrated person because he was a soldier in the Polish army, and they never gave him a promotion. The reason why they never gave him a promotion was because they felt threatened by him. He was very charismatic. He was very successful. He was very good at what he did, Khmelnytsky. And his superiors were afraid if they give him a promotion, you know, he'll take over. So they never gave him a promotion. So he was filled with frustration and hate. Also, it was a religious war. The Poles were Roman Catholics. It's a very important thing to... that's that 30-year war. But the role... This is a very important yisod. This part of understanding what went on here, because there's a lot of insight into what happened. But Poles were Roman Catholics, and Khmelnytsky was a rebel. He was a Greek Orthodox. Okay, a different religion. It all comes from Yashka, but a whole different version of the religion, and he hated the Roman Catholics. He hated them, number one, because they never promoted him. He hated them because he was a midlife crisis. He accomplished nothing with his life. He was 55 years old. He accomplished nothing with his life. He had nothing to show for it. And he was just damn an anti-Semite, and he was also a fervent Greek Orthodox. And the Poles were Roman Catholics, and he wanted to show them up. So he organized a rebellion. He took some thugs. And it all starts out some thugs, some Ukrainians, and little by little he had this incredible siyat hashemayim, which no one understands. Little by little he built up a following with a bunch of gangsters and thugs and the lowliest of the low. No one would ever imagine, like Hitler, who would ever imagined he would rise to power. Man would rise to power like this. Little by little, may Hashem yatzah hadavar, he rose to power, he conquered this castle, and that castle, this and that, and then he entered into Poland. Okay, he took all the Ukrainians, and he went there to break away, to make his own nation. He wanted to make Ukraine into their own nation. He could not do it on his own, and this went on for 13 years, by the way, 13 years until he died. And the only way he was able to do, he had an army at one point of 60,000 people. It's a lot of people, 60,000 troops. And the only way he was able to fight was by creating alliances. He needed other nations to support him. He started with the Tartars. You know who the Tartars are? I don't know who they are. The Tartars. Okay. And then the Tartars at one point betrayed him. And then he made an alliance with Russia and with the Swedes, Mongolia, and this and that. I don't even know. This is way too complicated for my little head. He always was negotiating, making alliances with other nations to help him, to support him. And that's what kept him going until the very end, until he died. In the process, they have to also remember an interesting story, is that at one point in time in this rebellion, the early years, before he really became successful, he was secretly planning to rebel against the Poles. And there was a Jew who happened to be eavesdropping. Okay, this is very critical to understand where his anti-Semitism came from. He was eavesdropping. and heard his plan, like Big Son Viseresh, Mamish, Mordechai, there's a Mordechai, heard what Chmelnitsky was planning to do. So this Jew, acting like Mordechai, who heard Big Son Viseresh plot, he went to the Polish government, whatever they were, whoever was in charge, and told them, this fellow here, Chmelnitsky, Big Son Viseresh, is planning to kill you, planning to rebel. So they got him and they imprisoned him. They put him in jail and they had a trial and he was sentenced to death. Nothing less than death. So you can imagine this arrogant, egomaniac, bloodthirsty Chmelnitsky here, they take him out to kill. He's on death row when he thinks of Jews. And then what happened? The king died. His lucky day, the king died. So there was a lot of confusion and he broke out of jail. And guess who broke him out of jail? Another Jew broke him out of jail. So, mitzad echad, he had this hatred for Jews because he was on death row because of a Jew. But mitzad sheni, it was a Jew that saved him. It was a Jew that saved him. So, I don't know, it's very complex. Okay, but he hated the Jews. He hated the Jews like with a sinas modest because they used the Jews to be his... He was also very powerful. He to be the tax collector, so on, v'chulu, v'chulu. And then he used the Jews as part of his technique in convincing the Ukrainians to rebel against the Poles by telling them it's the Jews, they're the ones who collect the taxes, they take steal your money, this and that. And indeed, he broke off, he went and he made a rebellion and became independent. And then he started to take revenge against the Jews. And the first city to go was Nimrov. They killed there on that took place on Chof Sivan. Today, 6,000 Jews were killed in Nimrov. Among them, the Rav of the Nimrov, Rabbi Yechiel. His name was Rabbi Yechiel, if I'm not mistaken. Rabbi Yechiel, and he was a very big tzaddik, and he rallied the people of the city to do tshuva, but to no avail, unfortunately. Now, this started a whole spree of killing, which went on for 2 years mainly, but really went on for 12 years. It really extended for 12 years until Chmelnitsky was dead, until he died, and the whole thing was a failure. And was Ukraine was not independent. Ukraine was swallowed up by Russia, by Poland, the Kles. They divided up in between. They made peace among themselves. So the whole thing was anyway a failure. But in the process, he and his army, his bloodthirsty army, succeeded in killing, no one really knows for sure, but up to 300,000 Jews. Some say it was even 500,000 Jews. Some say no, it's only 100,000 Jews. The estimates, no one knows. No one knows, but seemingly they say it's 300,000, a pretty good number. The commentators, they tell us, is that killing 300,000 people at that point in time in history is equivalent to killing 10 million people in the 1940s. Why? The only reason why Hitler was able to kill 6 million people was because they had gas chambers, they had technology, they had a system of mass murder. But in ancient times, in the 17th century, there was no mechanism to commit mass murder. So you got to kill a person one at a time. And you know, it doesn't go so easy. It doesn't go so easy to kill people one at a time. So, and yet he's managed to kill 300,000 people. The effort and energy that it takes to kill 300,000 people the way Chmelnitsky and his people did it is even more or is on par with the amount of energy and effort Hitler needed to kill 6 million people, because Hitler had to his advantage technology, trains, and he had cattle cars, and he had gas chambers and other forms of technology, and guns. Didn't have guns in the 17th century. There was no guns. Okay, you have to understand what's going on over here. And so therefore, it was a Holocaust. It was a Holocaust beyond, and the cruelty, the stories were just, the horrors that they write about is unreal. They would take pregnant women, they would cut them open, take out their baby, roast them, and give it to the mother to eat. They would take women, cut them open, and put a cat inside of them. Put a cat in and stitch them back up. And in order that you shouldn't be able to go and take out the cat, they would cut off the woman's hands so they couldn't go and take and cut the cat. And there was a living cat roaming around in you. I mean, the horrors, they would flay people, they would eat people, they destroyed shuls, they took the Sifrei Torah, and they made you... The horrors that were committed in the 17th century by Chmelnitsky and his bloodthirsty gang far exceed anything that is known in history. And even Hitler, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, did not surpass, did not equal the horrors with all the experiments of Mengele and his experiments. the horrors of the seven, what were done to these people was just beyond comprehension. These people were the Baalei Shulchan Aruch. Like the Crusades was the Baalei Rishayim, the Mefarshi HaShas. These were the greatest minds in Klal Yisrael. This is the time of the Shach, the Taz, the Magen Avram, the Shla. This is the time of the Kikoyin, the Yoina, the Nachla Shiva, Nachla Shiva. We're dealing over here with the biggest Baalei Halacha. The biggest Baalei Halacha were some of them lost their children, lost their wives. He wrote a whole sefer. They lost their wives, they lost children, they lost their parents. They died. It was a horror beyond belief. How many community after members in Poland? There was shtetlach. How many shtetlach were there? There's also Lithuania. They marched. I mean the Khmelnytsky march from Ukraine into Poland, Lithuania, Russia. They spread, they caused havoc all over. No one was safe from this. No one was safe from this. No matter where you lived, all the Jews were uprooted. Everyone was affected. They say up to between 300 and 700 communities were affected, were destroyed, were killed, were decimated, were looted. Some communities, they will fast, some of them had to give away every penny they owned. Lviv, Lemberg. Lemberg survived only because the Taz was there. There was a story with the Taz. He was Mispal, he had a dream. I'm going to save the city in the Zechus of David. The Taz's name was David. And they had a giveaway, they had a bribe. Khmelnytsky, they gave away all their money. Even that didn't work sometimes. The horrors go beyond belief. Now when all this was over, a lot of this was recorded by Rav Nosson Nota Hanover. Rav Nosson Nota Hanover, he also was killed. Okay, but I'm running out of time over here. I thought we were going to tell you some important things. But in any event, when all this was over, they were goyzer there. The Vaad, first of all, the Shach was goyzer at Tainis on Chav Sivan. But the Shach only was goyzer at Tainis to his own children, his own family, his own descendants. It's not clear the Shach wanted this Tainis to be for the entire Klal Yisrael. However, the Vaad, Arba Arotzais, the Vaad, this is a Vaad, it's like the Aguda. What was it? In Poland, Russia, Ukraine, and Lithuania. Not all of Poland, but these are basically the Vaad Arba Arotzos. These are the major, most part of Ukraine, part of Russia, Lithuania, and Poland. They all got together. They were guys in Lublin. I think in Lublin. That's where they sat. And they were guys there that Chav Sivan is a Yom Tzayim. Anyone, any boy that is over 18 years old, and any girl over 15 years old, I don't know what the nums are, has to fast. That was the gzerah. 18 and 15 years old, the boys and girls have to fast on this day. They'll go to their takonis by weddings, celebrations. A lot of things were not allowed to be done, and they were made. A lot of takonis were made to commemorate the churban, which happened during this time, and it was in the tainis was on Chav Sivan. Now let me just say, I'll just tell you a few important things. Beryl Wine, okay, he has a nice chapter on this, and he makes three observations. He says three things that, I don't know if I'm reading this correctly, I read it very quickly, so maybe I'm wrong, but he says something very interesting about this time, what we'll take out of this time. A lot of Musar in what he writes. He says that this Tkufa put to end two major controversies that were stirred up in the previous generation. Previous generation, this came in the aftermath of the Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition, the expulsion from Spain Inquisition. There were Jews who were of the opinion, and people say this, is that, you know why the Spanish Jew was destroyed? They were expelled. They said the Inquisition was because they sinned. People have the chutzpah to think this, is because they're Baalei Aveira. What are the Baalei Aveira? They mingled with the Goyim. They mingled with them. They adopted a Jew in Spain. They studied philosophy. In Spain, they dressed like the Goyim. They were like part of the culture, like, you know, in America, like just like in America. Every American Jew today is also part of the American culture, right? Everyone in America. So that's not the way a Jew should live. A Jew has to live in the ghetto, has to be apart, has to speak his own language. You have to be like the Jews in France and Germany. If you live like the Jews in France and Germany, then you're good. You have to completely distance yourself from the Goyim. Do not speak their language. Do not live with them. People had the chutzpah to say that is why the Jews of Spain were expelled. That's why they suffered the horrors of the Spanish Inquisition. That came to an end. Such a horrible thought, because the people in Poland and Lithuania and Russia and Ukraine, they lived in ghettos. They lived in more, they were more ghetto life, more than even Germany and France in the good old, in the previous generations. They were the extreme opposite of the type of life of Spain. And guess what? Didn't save them. In fact, they suffered even worse. They suffered even more than the Jews of Spain. So anyone who has such a hasaga to go and say the reason why you suffer is because your way of life is not, it's not Hashem's way, it's not what Hashem has in mind, it's making a big mistake. Hashem showed the world, it's not the reason why. Why it happened, no one knows, but that came to an end. Another major controversy is, remember years ago when the Art School Gemara was published, the Shmuel was, Rav Shach was very upset. Rav Shach wanted to put Art School in Cheren. It's a fact. And the American Russian yeshivas were very, very busy begging Rav Shach that it's not a bad thing and he shouldn't do it. And at the end, Rav Shach says, okay, I leave it to America. I'm not in America. American yeshivas tell me that it's a good thing, so I stand down. I'm not going to get involved. That was the end of the story, but that took that at the 11th, really, right before 12. The 11th hour. It's not the 11th hour. It means mamish, it was like mamish, the very, very end. He stood down. People had us to chavetz chayim. How do you make a Mishnah Berurah? You take away all the haravaya. You take away all of the yegiyah in Mishnah Berurah. When they wrote the Shulchan Aruch in this generation, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, and the Shach and the Taz, people says, what kind of business is this? No one's going to learn anymore. No one's going to. This is not the way you learn. You have to learn from the sugyas. They viewed the Shulchan Aruch like an art school Gemara. That's what they viewed it.
They viewed the Beis Yosef the same way.
Exactly.
No, I'm talking
when
about
this happened,
on the tour.
When this happened, all of the Yedust Kufa for 50 years, all of the yeshivas were shut down. There were no yeshivas in operation. And everything was destroyed. And it was clear as day that if not for the fact that Klal Yisrael had a Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, the whole Jewish halacha tradition would have been gone. It was the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about that a Shulchan Aruch was written in advance of this horror.
The refuah
in the Makkah. So this came to an end. This controversy. How could you write a Shulchan Aruch? Klal Yisrael needs a Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Kol Gemara because you never know what's going to be. Not everyone's going to be zoicha to have. You don't know what's going to be. It put an end to that concept. Two very, very powerful things. Then he said something very powerful, is that this was a direct cause of Kabbalah. Today, we don't realize how influenced we are by Kabbalah. We live in a world of Kabbalah. You don't even realize. Everything we do today is all Kabbalah. Kabbalah. Can you appreciate. Where does it all come from? It all started with the Tachvatat. Because until Tachvatat, anyone that would preach Kabbalah would be silenced. Because he would say, what are you talking about? Kabbalah, live a normal life. There was no way people could explain why this happened. It was beyond understanding how such a tragedy can happen. 300,000 people, like I told you, the energy that went into kill 300,000 people was like the Holocaust, 6 million people. No one could understand why this happened. No one can relate any sin anyone did cannot anywhere be a cause of such horror. And the only way to explain this, people have begun to fantasize, it's Kabbalah. We don't know what goes on Shemayim. So no, the suppression of Kabbalah, is it right to say Kabbalah? I don't know. It's not for me to say, that's not my problem. But until this point in time, Kabbalah was suppressed. When people needed Kabbalah as a way, as a release to fantasize why horrible things, bad things happen to good people, no longer was the other side suppressing Kabbalah. Maybe you're right, maybe there's a Gilgal, maybe a this, maybe that. I'm not saying that, don't get me. But the Tsar was so great, no one suppressed Kabbalah anymore. And then, that's why Hasidus rose as a direct result of this Tekufa.
But I've read also that the state of despair Klal Yisrael
also
right.
Yeah. It's also part of it. So this was an outgrowth. Now, why don't we do it Bizman Hazeh? Why don't we commemorate Bizman Hazeh? So the Vad Arba Rotzeis was going, so you have to fast. Everyone in Poland, Lithuania, in Russia has to fast. So why don't we do that? We have two reasons why we fast. It covers the whole world already. Rabbeinu Tam was going there, France, Germany, and England for what happened in the year 1171. It's the same date. It's the same date. And Chav Sivan was the same date as the beginning of this Harif, the Khmelnytsky massacres in the year 1648. Same date. Chav, and this Gzer, the Vada Arba Ratzos was Gzer on Poland, Lithuania, all the Vada Arba Ratzos, the rest of. So why not? It's a very big mystery. Why not? So some is the Holocaust eclipsed. Indeed, it was done, but the Holocaust eclipsed the horrors of the past. So for some reason, when Klal Yisrael rebuilt, it was just too much. Just too much, the Holocaust and this, so somehow we just forgot about it. Others, to give it more of a halachic, is that it was only Nigzar on these Mekoymos. It wasn't even Nigzar for the whole world. It was Nigzar on, today there are Jews, no, the Jews don't live there anymore. I mean, they live there, whatever, there are small pockets of Jews, people coming back, they're coming back now, this, that, but It was only for these Mekoymas. After the Holocaust, we migrated to Eretz Yisrael, to America, to other places. Memela, it became bottle. All right, that's it. Some also want to say another answer. I saw over here someone want to say is that there it was done out of rebellion. The people they were caught in the crossfires. Holocaust was done by a country, by Germany. It was done by a country. It was done by a government. This was done by rebels. Khmelnytsky never succeeded. He failed. He had some independence, autonomy for Kufa, but the end was Ukraine never, at this point, was never independent. It became independent later on, years later. Even then, there was always massacres. But it was done. The Jews were caught in the crossfires. When Jews are caught in the crossfire, it does not warrant a holiday l'doyres. It warrants a commemoration l'shah. When there's a gezera by a malchus to destroy the Jews, Holocaust, that is more significant than we go, that's churban. Then we say, oh, it's part of Tisha B'Av. It's not a special independent day. But when an event occurs as part of, I don't know, these are the shvach answers. The answers don't really do anything for us. But in any event, the very least we can do is to reflect upon the tragedy, upon the sacrifice, and all of these sacrifices were done with incredible kiddush. That's the main thing to remember, with kiddush Hashem. In many of these situations, they were offered the opportunity to convert, and they all refused. They all died of kiddush Hashem. And therefore, that is a very great schus that we have to be yoinik from ad hayoim hazeh. Okay.